I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting everyone together to watch the game is fun until you realize you're running low on snacks right before halftime. That's why Shipt is there for you on game day. Whether going for that classic spread, chips and dip, or mixing in even a few healthier options, I can, and so can you, order all the favorites for same-day delivery to keep the party going, especially now that March is here. And if that Shipt bowl is looking suddenly too empty, no stress, just place another order and it shows up the same day. Shipt makes last minute hosting so much easier. You can get snacks, party supplies, decorations, and more delivered from nearby stores. I'm talking grocery runs from places like Safeway or Albertsons, party decor from Michaels, or even a quick Target order. All while you're getting ready for guests with Shipt, you can order same day delivery on groceries, gifts, and so much more. And shoppers are known for incredible attention to detail and care. Plus, with an annual Shipt membership, you get unlimited orders, zero delivery fees on orders over $35, exclusive deals, and even the option to request your favorite shoppers again. Download the app or order at Shipt.com. That's Shipt.com.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? I was so amazed at how he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube.
I think we should call a doctor.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Get in the game with the college-branded Venmo debit card. Rep your team with every tap and earn up to 5% cash back with Venmo Stash, a new rewards program from Venmo. No monthly fee, no minimum balance, just school pride and spending power. Get in the game and sign up for the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/collegecard. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. Select schools available. Venmo Stash terms and exclusions apply at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya! The opening day edition of Rico Bronya. It was such an exciting opening day win that my youngest son, who wasn't at opening day, wanted to scream Rico Bronya and open the podcast with us. Anything you'd like to talk about today, Spence? Oh, no, you're getting stage fright? All right, Spence, who's your favorite Met? We'll go that way.
Lindor!
Pretty good choice. Do you know that we won on opening day? We did. Yeah. What teams don't you like, Spence?
You know that.
Well, I know that, but the audience would love to know. What team do you not like?
The audience already know.
Oh, they already know what team you don't like?
Yeah.
Well, they want you to say it. Who do you boo, Spence?
You said our audience know who I don't like.
They know you don't like a certain team that also plays in New York?
Mitch.
That was a good answer. All right, now eat your dinner while we Rico, okay, buddy? There he is, my youngest son, who did not begin his opening day streak today. Yes, and we'll give you dollars. It was a wonderful opening day experience. It is something that we are used to as Met fans. We're actually used to this. Winning on opening day is something that is common in our franchise's history. It was a beautiful day at Citi Field. I know it was a stressful day at Citi Field for many. There was a lot of traffic. There were issues with trains. There were issues with parking. There were issues with traffic. And I, too, didn't make first pitch. I actually walked in as Paul Skenes was being cheered off of the mound, which led to a great question by not him, but my oldest son, which is, why are we cheering him? Are we thanking him? Are we recruiting him for the future? Maybe all of the above, but it was a wild day at Citi Field. But I start by saying that if you went to this game and you were stressed by traffic or parking or whatever it was, when you were sitting there finally in the ballpark, even if you missed the first pitch, when you were sitting there in 70 degree weather on a Thursday afternoon, wasn't it great? Isn't this what we wait for? Isn't this the thing as a Met fan and a baseball fan we think about all winter long? A game that matters. Seeing the players that we talk so much about over the last few months actually play baseball. So it was a great opening day. It was a fun opening day. There's certainly a lot to talk about from this game as the Mets defeat the Pittsburgh Pirates by a final score of, how many did they get in the ninth inning? Oh, okay. 11-7. There was no LD offense today for the New York Mets. It was a weird game. And look, I consumed it in an odd way because I was on the air. I did leave my show early. I tried to contribute by doing part of the show on the subway and the train and then eventually Citi Field. So it was odd walking into that building, and I walked in as it was 5-2. Brett Beatty at the three-run triple. Marcus Semien had the RBI double. And I think it was actually as Alvarez was at the plate, eventually got hit by a pitch. And then, yes, Paul Skeens was booed, cheered off the mound. But it was such an odd game when you go back to the very beginning. And I'm going to rewatch every pitch just to see, especially the issues that O'Neill Cruz had defensively and how tricky the wind was on this day. But it was an odd day because, and I was talking about this on Evan and Tiki, and I talked a little bit about it here, that this is such a new team. And as much time as we have spent doing hundreds of offseason Ricos, whatever that grand total was, talking about these players and all the guys they acquired, it was odd seeing them. Like when that lineup came out earlier on Thursday and I wrote it down in my scorebook and I'm thinking about Freddy Peralta making the start, it was just odd to see how all of these pieces are going to work together. And it was odd to know, wow, okay, I watched Bo Bichette play in spring training. We talked about Bo Bichette. But now we're actually watching him and we're caring about the results. And so as I was writing all the names down and including Freddy Peralta, there was a part of me that continued to say, I don't know what to expect. I don't know what to expect from this season. And even on opening day, I know we grow accustomed to winning. I didn't know what to expect from this game. And when you think about the way it starts, O'Neill Cruz gets a base hit. Yes.
You got this, Father Dog. You were eating it.
Yes. I ate this muffin yesterday on yesterday's Rico Bronya, and now it's empty. I leave this place a pigsty. I need to be better. That's a bad job out of me. Now, what you need to do, Spence, is go eat your pizza, okay? Get it done. Thank you. You got it. All right. How we doing, everybody? It's opening day. Hey. But think about the oddity of the way this game started. Like, here's our ace. Here's Freddy Peralta. Gives up this leadoff hit to O'Neill Cruz. It kind of seems innocent. And then Brandon Lowe, who's a brand new acquisition for them, a guy that we talked about for the Mets, a guy who had been rumored as someone David Stearns would be interested in. We analyzed, where would he fit? Where would he fit on this team? Good player, winning player, hits a two-run home run that off the bat, you don't think is getting out. Now, I admit, I am saying this from the perspective of my dad, who was at the game, and the perspective of watching the replay of the home run. I was still not at Citi Field at this moment. In fact, I was stunned when my game day app showed me 2-0 Pirates. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And I had visions. I shouldn't, but I guess this is the damaged Met fan that I am. I had visions of Tommy Glavin. And I know that the weather was nothing like that. And it's funny, I heard Gio mention it on Boomer and Gio. He is a Met fan, and that's an opening day that stings with him. And it's an opening day that made my Mets Bible. I mean, I talked about that opening day where it's 35 degrees out and Tommy Glavin's getting bombed and eventually is booed off the mound. Look, I wasn't worried necessarily that Freddy Peralta was going to get booed off the mound, but it was a rough start. And then you combine that with what I still don't even understand as a screwed up national anthem, but I've been told that the national anthem was messed up. I still don't know if that's even true. You can comment if you'd like right now on this YouTube feed or wherever you download your podcasts or tweet at me. I still don't know if the national anthem was screwed up.
Or you can comment Demi Dozo says 7.
Okay. Thank you, Spence. I appreciate that. Now eat your pizza. All right. So I don't even know if the national anthem was screwed up, but the game kind of starts in this odd way. Peralta gives up a 2-run home run to Brandon Lowe. We're hearing about how the anthem is screwed up. And yeah, you're intimidated by Paul Skeens. I mean, this is a guy who comes into this start with a career ERA of 1.96. And I know that's impossible to keep up. And certainly a game like this certainly reminded you of that. But down 2-0, going into the bottom of the first inning with a lineup that, look, what do we know about them? We know they're going to make more contact, sure. We know they're probably going to hit fewer home runs. But It's so new. I go back to the newness thing. And yeah, I got this worry of, all right, we gave up two in the first inning. That may be enough. We may not be able to get two runs off of Paul Skenes. And you watch the at-bats in the first inning, and there was so many things you have to love just about that first inning. Obviously, scoring five runs is nice, and having O'Neill Cruz not being able to judge a fly ball is nice. But think about these little things. You have a good at-bat by Francisco Lindor to really set the tone for the game by drawing a walk. You've got Juan Soto behind in the count getting a base hit. You have Bo Bichette, and this is like, what a great introduction to Bo Bichette, that here he is with first and third, nobody out, 2-0 game, and he's behind in the count, and he does the thing that we're looking for, contact. I hate hearing how strikeouts don't matter. In a spot like that, it does. In a spot like that where you've got two on and nobody out, and I'm not knocking anybody else, but if you're a big strikeout guy, if you're an all or nothing guy, and you strike out, that inning is short-circuited. Paul Skenes can kind of get back into a groove. And behind in the count, 0-2, Bo Bichette, it's a fly ball to right field. Underrated, huge moment. There's a lot of underrated, huge moments in this game. Let me start with that. Because that's a part of the appeal of Bo Bichette, am I right? Isn't that part of the appeal? That not only is he clutch, but he's going to put the bat on the ball. And in a spot like that, bat on the ball matters. In a spot like that, because we don't know yet that they're going to knock Paul Skenes out in the first inning. We're not exactly aware of that. So we need to get a run off of him. This first and third, nobody out. Get a run in. And that at-bat, underrated, but really, really important. And even the Jorge Polanco infield hit, that's the beauty of contact. Good things can happen on contact. And then Luis Robert Jr., who, how often did we talk about this guy before he was ever a Met? We argued about it, right? For all you loyal Rico listeners, they should get him. No, they shouldn't. I'm high on Robert Jr. No, you're not. They bring him in. We know about the deal. And in his first at-bat as a Met, and I didn't even love the idea of Luis Robert Jr. batting fifth. I don't love it. He gives you this awesome 10-pitch at-bat that turns into a walk. Who saw that coming? Luis Robert Jr. is not exactly known for that. It's not like Bo Bichette did it. Luis Robert Jr. did it. And what does that do? And I think we saw this multiple times in the game. When you have a grinded out at bat, whether it ends in a walk or a few innings later when Bo Bichette's epic 13-pitch at bat ends in a strikeout, watch what happens next. There should be a stat for that. Not what do you do in a 12-pitch at bat or a 10-pitch at bat, but how does that affect what the next batter does? So when Luis Robert Jr. gives you a 10-pitch walk, Brett Beatty is the one who on the second pitch of his at-bat hits the line drive at O'Neill Cruz that he just gets completely fooled on. And yes, there's luck involved. No question about it. A part of why Paul Skenes got knocked out in this game is because O'Neill Cruz can't judge a fly ball. No doubt about it. And I will take that luck. And you will take that luck. Because when it goes against us, no one's going to feel bad. But obviously that moment, that play turned into such a game-changing moment, because not only does it give you three runs and clear the bases, but now all of a sudden, because of the at-bat that Robert Jr. had, because of the at-bat Lindor had to start the game, Paul Skenes' pitch count is adding up. And I watched what Paul Skenes said after the game in terms of coming out. He knew and understood that with a very high pitch count in start number one after you just pitched in the WBC, it was smart to take him out in the first inning. I mean, I know we benefited from it because all of a sudden here's old friend Johan Ramirez coming in, but it was smart. You're not going to waste bullets in a March game, in a game in which things didn't go his way. A part of it's his fault. He owns that. The Lindor walk set the tone for the game. Walking Luis Robert Jr. to load the bases up for Beatty set the tone for the game. And look, you're not helped out by your defense. No doubt. But when he hit Alvarez with two outs, and now Lindor was coming back up, and this is now when I'm entrenched in my seat, out of breath, excited, getting text message that I lost my wallet. More on that a little bit later on, because I had an adventurous opening day. But seeing Paul Skenes come out of this game in the first inning, and seeing this new look Met offense, not by hitting home runs, not even by ripping RBI singles at 110 miles an hour, seeing Paul Skenes come out no matter how the Mets scored those runs, was an awesome feeling because the crowd was electric. They were mocking him. They were enjoying it. Hopefully Paul isn't too offended by it because God knows we'll be recruiting him in a couple of years. But what an answer to a rocky first inning from Freddie Peralta. And let me get back to Freddie because it was a weird start by Peralta. Really strange. Because after he gives up the two-run home run and puts his team in a hole, he struck out the side to end the first inning and looked dominant. Like he looked locked in, striking three guys out in a row. And it felt, by the way, breaking news around baseball. Nico Hoerner agrees to a 6-year contract extension with Chicago. Nico was going to be one of the more appealing free agents, not necessarily for the Mets, but he was going to be a free agent at the end of the year, and the Cubs get it done. So here we are in the middle of opening day. They're losing, and Nico Hoerner gets a contract extension. So I guess it's possible Freddie will get one. Back to Freddie, though. He did a great job locking down after he gives up the 2-run home run, and he actually retired. It was 8 in a row, actually. And he looked so good, including my first screw up when it comes to ABS. Because, you know, ABS during the Yankee game was seldomly used. So I was curious, like, all right, how aggressive will ABS be used in the first Met game? And the first challenge in the history of regular season Met baseball was a big one. I mean, think about how significant this was. I'll walk you back to the situation. There's one out and nobody on. At this point, the Mets are up 5-2. So very early in the game, but they do have a 3-run lead. And with one out and nobody on, O'Neill Cruz walks. He walks on a 3-2 pitch. Freddie Peralta, really Francisco Alvarez, immediately says, I don't think that was ball four. And he challenges it. And it turns into a backwards K, as they say. Turns into a strikeout. That is a big turn of events. And I admit, and I guess this is something I have to get used to, and maybe some of you guys out there have to get used to if you're geeks like me scoring these games, I was too quick to write down the walk. And I find myself way too quick writing anything down. Like, I have to pause. I got to wait. Maybe on TV it'll be better, but at the game it's just like, oh, it's a strike. Write it down. So I have to fix that. But think about how significant that moment was.
Zootopia 2 has come home to Disney Plus.
Let's go!
Get ready for a new case.
We're the greatest partners of all time!
New friends.
Gary the Snake.
And your last name?
The Snake.
Dream Team.
New habitats.
Zootopia has a secret reptile population.
You can watch the record-breaking phenomenon at home. Zootopia 2, now available on Disney Plus, rated PG. And right now, you can get Disney Plus and Hulu for just $4.99 a month for 3 months with a special limited time offer. Ends March 24th. After 3 months, plan auto renews at $12.99 a month. Terms apply.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
The Bleacher Report app is your destination for sports. Right now, the NBA is heating up, March Madness is here, and MLB is almost back. Every day there's a new headline, a new highlight, a new moment you've got to see for yourself. That's why I stay locked in with the Bleacher Report app. For me, it's about staying connected to my sports. I can follow the teams I care about, get real-time scores, breaking news, and highlights all in one place. Download the Bleacher Report app today so you never miss a moment.
You can't assume everything plays out the same way, so I can't assume that Brandon Lowe or Brandon Lau. I by the way, the Lowe and Lau's drive me nuts. You know, Nathaniel, Brandon, Josh. And then I get confused on which one's the Lau and which one's the Lowe. So excuse me for that. But he comes up now with two outs and nobody on, hits another home run. Again, can't assume everything plays out the same way if that turn isn't overcalled. But it was big, it was significant, and it was clutch. So good job by Francisco Alvarez. You got to pick the moment. And I think certainly that's a swing. I mean, you're talking about the difference between ball four and strike three. I think anytime you are talking about the difference between ball four and strike three, it's probably going to be worth it. But let me get back to Freddie, because as big as the challenge was, he gives up the home run. Now it's a 5-3 game. They give him another run in the fourth inning. I'll get back to the offense in a little bit. And then with a pitch count of 58 through four, and it feels like he's locked this down, the fifth inning was really the inning that short-circuited his outing. Because I thought he had a chance to go six. I don't want to say he had a chance to go seven. I think this early in the season, that was always unlikely. But with a pitch count of 58 through four, I certainly thought he could get through the fifth and sixth. He gives up the blue pit to Nick Gonzalez, and then Henry Davis hits a line drive that Bo Bichette came so close to making a diving play on. And then you needed a sundial for Juan Soto to get the ball in the left field corner. That is a blind spot I have in Citi Field. But I tell you, it felt like Juan Soto, it took forever for him to find that baseball. So Gonzalez scored from first. And now all of a sudden you're like, damn, this is getting close. It's a 6-4 game. And the Pirates have a runner on second and nobody out with the top of the order coming up. And I thought it was really important to salvage this start, because it was an average start by Freddie. It was a weird start. Didn't walk anybody, struck out seven. But ultimately, you give up four runs in five innings. We're not celebrating it. Now, it's not a great outing. But I thought it was really important at that part of the game to get through that fifth inning without that run scoring. I think Mendy was always going to push him to get through that fifth inning. But again, Mets are scoring a lot of runs. But all of a sudden, it's a 6-4 game. You can't let it be 6-5. I thought it was very important for Peralta to fight through that fifth inning. And he did. Strikes out O'Neill Cruz, got Brandon Lowe to ground out, and then struck out Brian Reynolds in quite a battle. And sometimes you know a guy's coming out of the game, not by pitch count. His pitch count was 80. You know a guy's coming out of the game based on the emotion they show coming off of the mound when they get a big out. And so Peralta showed a ton of emotion when he struck out Brian Reynolds. And you just knew. I think you knew based on where we are in the season. It is very, very early. I think you know based on what we talked about a little bit during spring training and the offseason around Freddie, like how much are they going to push him? I don't know. Are they going to push him the way Milwaukee did, which is not a lot, and basically say you're 5-6 and done, and we're not going to ask you to throw 110 pitches? We're going to see as the season goes on. We certainly can't tell on March 26th. I'm not saying we can, but you knew he was done. If this is June, am I more likely to say, you know what, come out and pitch the sixth inning. You just retired three in a row. You actually have done a really good job against Ozuna, O'Hearn, and Triolo. So go out there and give me three more outs. Absolutely. I think May Evan is pushing Peralta to come out for the sixth inning. But March 26th, Evan understands where we are. I understand the emotion he showed coming off the mound. I understand that 80 doesn't feel like a big pitch count, but it is March 26th. And I also understand that you have an incredibly fresh bullpen. It's day one with an off day on Friday. So no issue taking Freddie Peralta out. I think it'll be different later on. But I want to go to the offense before we talk about the bullpen and how they shut this thing down. Because Bo Bichette had an at-bat in this game that needs to be celebrated. Because there's a lot of guys offensively when you score 11 runs that you can celebrate. You can celebrate Lindor. I know he's the only Met, I think, to not get a base hit in this game. But he walked three times and he scored all three times. He was a perfect table setter. Juan Soto got on base three times. Jorge Polanco got on base three times. Luis Robert Jr. had a couple of hits, including a walk. He was on base three times. Brett Beatty had the three-run triple. Marcus Semien had two hits, including an RBI double. And then, of course, Benj and Alvarez with the back-to-back home runs later on in the game. So you can celebrate everyone offensively, but Bo Bichette, welcome to the Mets, Bo, had two underrated moments. I talked about the first one, which is the sacrifice fly in the first inning. I thought it was very important to get that run home. Already went on a diatribe about that. How about the 13-pitch at-bat in the fifth inning? This was an at-bat, and I've admitted this before. I've been mocked by everybody. I think every partner I've ever had has mocked me for loving the long at-bat. Tiki's mocked me. Craig's mocked me. I love it. The Luis Guillorme at-bat from spring training. You guys know. The real ones know. How awesome was that? What was it, a 21-pitch at-bat? Something of that nature? So give me a long at-bat. Inject it into my veins. So let's set up the situation. It's the bottom of the fifth inning. The Pittsburgh Pirates have just made this thing a little bit closer, right? They made it a 6-4 game. The Mets make it 7-4 when Juan Soto hits an RBI single. Real quick about that, the RBI single was a ground ball a little bit to the right of Jared Triolo. And I joked to my dad, and I don't think it's a joke, I think it's real. I said, if this was last year, that ground ball's right at Triolo, and it's a double play, and certain Met fans are booing Juan Soto. But every year is different. And so when Soto came up with the bases loaded and one out, he hit a ground ball that found a hole. And it was big. It gave them a three-run lead. But still, three-run lead, bottom of the fifth inning, bullpen's coming in. It doesn't feel comfortable. So Bo Bichette comes up and proceeds to give you this incredible at-bat. He fouled. It was either seven or eight pitches in a row off. Eight in a row. It was a 13-pitch at-bat. And yes, he struck out. Sucks, but he struck out. But the reason why this needs to be celebrated, the reason why it was such an underrated moment, is like I said earlier about the Luis Robert Jr. at-bat, the 10-pitch walk that led or was right before the Beatty triple and the Simeon RBI double. I ask you, well, what happened next, sir? After that happened, what occurred? Well, in that inning against, who was pitching in this at this point? Isaac Mattson was now in the game. So this poor Isaac Mattson goes through this war, this battle with Bo Bichette, this epic duel with Bo Bichette. And he strikes him out. He wins the duel, but he don't win the war because the next hitter is Jorge Polanco, who walked on four pitches. Can you honestly tell me that the at-bat that Bichette had didn't impact what just happened to the next batter, a four-pitch walk? I think it did. After that, Luis Robert Jr. had the little check swing, the excuse me check swing, beat it out for an infield hit. So I'm not going to put as much stock in that. That was fortunate, but hey, take advantage of it. Give Robert Jr. credit. Right after that, excuse me, he busted it down the line, showed the speed, beat it out, gave the Mets an extra run. But the Polanco walk, a four-pitch walk, right after a 13-pitch at-bat, I don't think it's a coincidence. And so that was important, the three runs that they scored in the bottom of the fifth inning, giving Tobias Myers a little bit of wiggle room. I'll finish up with the offense. We'll get back to the pitching. Obviously, Carson Bench had an awesome moment. I thought Carson Bench had actually, believe it or not, a few awesome moments because Carson Bench not only hits the first major league home run, which is obvious and it's great, and he had a curtain call, and that's awesome. What can I add on that? We all saw it. It was great. Good for Carson Bench. How about the at-bat before that? So that same inning we were just talking about, the fifth inning where they scored the three insurance runs, where Bo Bichette had the long at-bat, that whole thing, that inning began with one out and nobody on and Carson Bench drawing a walk against a left-handed pitcher in Mason Montgomery. And that's what caused the pitching change and eventually Mattson to come in. How about that at-bat? There were a lot of good at-bats in this game. We talked about a few of them. How about that one? How about a rookie in his third major league at-bat facing a lefty? I don't care which lefty it is. I understand he's not Sandy Koufax or Tarik Skubal. He's facing a lefty and draws a walk. And, of course, that led to Alvarez getting a hit, Lindor a walk. We mentioned the Soto hit. So even before Carson Bench had the home run, which is, of course, something he will never forget about, is a great moment for him, awesome moment for him. Even before that happened, the quality at-bat walk that really got that inning going. And I think what we saw on opening day, and it's one game. I don't need anyone telling me, you think they're going to win the World Series. I haven't said any of that. I'm breaking down a baseball game, which is fun to do. It's fun to break down a game after meaningless spring training games for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. So I'm not drawing any big conclusions. I am reacting to a baseball game that I thought saw a lot of quality at-bats. I thought the Mets did a really good job up and down this lineup of having long at-bats. I think it's what contributed to Skeens coming out, along with O'Neill Cruz's bad defense. They didn't strike out all that much. I'm looking at the grand total. I guess they tacked on a few late. Soto struck out two guys. That's Gregory Soto. Dennis Santana struck out a guy. So I guess the grand total was nine. So not that low. But I guess in the big moment, they didn't strike out. There weren't a lot of significant strikeouts. But more than that, it was the quality at-bat. One of the things that was mentioned by David Stearns, who is certainly not perfect, and I'm not putting over completely, but was, hey, the quality of the at-bat from this team needs to look different. In day one, it did. Defensively, there's not much to judge. No, Bo Bichette was fine. He had that one offline throw, but Polanco got off the bag, made the play, tagged the runner. No biggie spot. Overall, the defense was fine. I don't think it was tested very much. I don't think it was anything amazing. Luis Robert Jr. had that sliding catch in center. But overall, it was fine. And we will learn as the games go on how much better defensively they are, if they are at all. But the thing you saw on opening day was the at-bat. The at-bats were different. And some of it was from the guys that are already here. And there aren't a lot. I mean, this is, that's the crazy part. Like, there are five new players. Let me confirm that. Five new players. Bichette, Polanco, Robert Jr., Simeon, and Benj. Benj is a new player. I know he's a Met, but he was a minor leaguer last year. Five new players in this lineup. And seven new lineup members for opening day. We didn't have Brett Beatty last year on an opening day lineup, and Alvarez was hurt. So a lot of changes, which is what I talked about at the beginning. But some of the guys who've been here, like Lindor, like Soto, like Alvarez, they had great at-bats too. Alvarez had a base hit on an 0-2 count. That was right after Benj drew that awesome walk we talked about. He hit the bomb of a home run right after Benj hit his first major league home run. It was really one of those days where everything was good offensively, but the quality of the at-bat was tremendous. That was really good to see. And as far as the bullpen's concerned, the 8 innings from Tobias Myers, I guess that's the value of having multiple guys who can pitch certainly more than multiple innings. I mean, Tobias Myers is a starter. And so if Carlos Mendoza wanted to, he could have finished the game. He chose to go to Luis Garcia, who, not a good start for Luis. I mean, the good news is they had a big lead. That's the good news. It's 11-5. But I know the way we are with bullpen arms. I know the way we were with Ryan Stanek. I know the way we are with guys. He's going to be the first one we turn on. Dickie Lovelady, I guess, already is, but he's not going to last here. I think that's pretty obvious. But not a great debut for Luis Garcia. Just not great. End of the world? No. We didn't even hear groans in the ninth inning, though. That was encouraging because it's 11-5. Garcia gives up back-to-back hits before he gets the first out, then gives up the two-run double to Nick Gonzalez. And you see warm-up action in the Met bullpen. You see that Mendy's saying to himself, geez, I got to get the pen warmed up. And I don't think it would have been the worst thing in the world for Devin Williams to make his debut in a nice, soft leverage situation. But Garcia was at least able to get those last three outs, secure the victory, but no groans. The Met fan was almost like, we're going to win this game. I ain't worried. I know we're winning on opening day, and I know that Luis Garcia is not going to cause this to ruin my day if you had stuck around to the very end. But he was able to get the final outs, and the Mets were able to get a victory 11-7. Let me read some of your emails. I am curious how the Ricoers out there are feeling after opening day. Obviously, very good. The RicoB at gmail.com. The first email I get is an update on Pete Alonso. I am not doing this.
Protein is now at Starbucks, and it's never tasted so good. You can add protein cold foam to your favorite drink or try one of our new protein lattes or matcha. Try it today at Starbucks.
So good, so good, so good.
Spring styles are at Nordstrom Rack stores now, and they're up to 60% off. Stock up and save on Rag & Bone, Madewell, Vince, All Saints, and more of your favorites.
How did I not know Rack has Adidas?
Why do we rack? For the hottest deals. Just so many good brands.
Join the Nordy Club to unlock exclusive discounts, shop new arrivals first, and more. Plus, buy online and pick up at your favorite Rack store for free. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
This episode is brought to you by White Claw Search. Great podcast pick, friend. No surprises there. After all, you're all about finding the tastiest flavors out there, just like White Claw Search. And with big, bold flavors to enjoy, like blood orange, blackberry, cranberry, and more, it's time to go all in on taste. Unleash the flavor. Unleash White Claw Search. Please drink responsibly. Hard seltzer with flavors. 8% alcohol by volume. White Claw Seltzer Works. Chicago, Illinois.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Let me start with Eddie Cedeno. Eddie writes, pitch tracking score bug gone at the stadium. Hey, guys, first time, long time. Did anyone else notice the pitch tracking stats were missing from the scoreboards for opening day? In years past, they always showed the pitch type and speed on the displays that run along the right and left field line. In years prior, they even had really progressive stats like IVB displayed. Yet today it was nowhere to be found. Thanks, love the show. I didn't notice it because I walked in late and I'm just so behind and I'm like, oh, let me fill in my scorecard. Let me look around. Let me say hi to my dad, hi to people in my section. There's a lot I missed. I plan on going to Saturday and Sunday's game. Saturday, I don't know. I mean, the temperature looks rough, but definitely Sunday to see Nolan McClain. I'll have a better idea of what's different in terms of that. The one thing I did notice, and I sort of remember Citi Field having it, is when Bichette was having that marathon at bat, I was looking up to see what pitch this was. And I didn't see it, so I went right to the MLB app, which is always easy. Ryan Busby writes, why did Polanco slide? Did you know why Polanco slid during Beatty's triple? Robert almost ran him over because of it. At least it was a feet-first slide. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. I'll have to rewatch that. I didn't notice that. Andrew writes, hey, Evan, great way to start the season. Can't ask for much more. Fluky 47-degree homer aside. Some thoughts from the ballpark. Did you notice all the pitch tracking info is gone? There you go, another person. They used to show every pitch from the current AB on the smaller board next to the main Jumbotron and pitch break stats after every pitch on the baselines. I can't see the main Jumbotron from my seat, so maybe it just moved, but I couldn't see it. If it's gone, I'm wondering if it's a rule change, maybe related to ABS. I wonder why. If it is related to ABS, I'd wonder why. As impressive as Robert and Beatty were, Cruz chased Skeens far more than any Mets hitter did. If he just makes those plays, Skeens probably goes at least four or five innings and gives up something like four runs, very similar to Freddy Peralta. Speaking of run prevention, Bo Bichette looks like the worst defender in the lineup. I think Polanco will figure out first base quickly. He almost looked like a real first baseman when he saved Bo on that bad throw from third base. Maybe he settles into the role, but so far Bichette seems to be the one who should move to DH. That's probably not something his agent would be excited about. I hope they don't have a promise to him to play the field or feel like they owe it to him to leave him there for an extended stretch if it doesn't improve. I did not jump to that conclusion after one game. I get you watch spring training. It was uneven. It was also uneven for us because we're not able to watch every single inning. I'm not jumping to that conclusion about Bo Bichette. I think that could there be a discussion come July? Because Brett Beatty's a good defender. And there were a few things about the lineup that jumped out at me. Number one was that, like, should Beatty be the DH? Should Beatty ever be the DH? He's probably a better first baseman than Polanco. He's a better third baseman, like you said, than Bo Bichette. Now, I know you're not doing that to Bo, but does it make sense for Beatty to DH? I'd be curious about day two and day three. Is Beatty the everyday DH, or is there going to be a lot of fluctuation? We're going to find out based on how Mendy manages this thing. The only other thing, and it's nitpicky, but it's the way I feel, I wouldn't construct the order the way he did. Now, Robert Jr. had a great first day. I love Robert Jr. towards the bottom of the order. I wouldn't even mind Carson Bench batting ninth. Alvarez is a ninth place hitter I actually don't love because I want somebody who can get on base or who would get on base. He's not one to do it very often. Let's go through more of your emails. Nick Pauly writes, most fruitful first inning since Jake Arrieta. This was the most fruitful big first inning off an unlikely ace candidate since teeing off Jake Arrieta in the 2015 NLCS. I don't know if I've ever told this story about that. So it's a cold night, right? Mets, Cubs, NLCS. And I'm in what I think is called the Piazza Club. I think they changed it again. But, you know, the club behind the 300 section. And me and my dad are, you know, standing there. We're just staying warm right before first pitch. And we overheard Brian Kenny. I like Brian Kenny. Brian Kenny's had me on his show. This is not personal. I'm just going to repeat what I heard Brian Kenny say. And I don't think it's out of turn. I don't think it's something he'd be totally embarrassed by. Feels like Brian's got a good sense of humor. But Brian Kenny was talking cockily, would be the way I would describe it, how the Mets had no chance to hit Jake Arrieta. How he is so locked in. He's the best pitcher in baseball. They can't hit him. It's impossible. And my dad turned to me and said, you could write it down. We're going to pound this guy. And it was all because Brian Kenny was so arrogant about how the Mets couldn't hit him. What's going on, Spence?
He's on off of the Rico for a second.
I have to get off the Rico for a second?
Yeah.
Why, is everything okay?
Just don't worry about it.
Well, what does it involve? Is there an emergency?
No, it's around here, no.
Did Mama tell you this?
No, it just happened.
Well, what happened? Wait, is it an emergency?
I can't see it.
Okay.
He
well.
Stuff.
So I have to get off the Rico?
Yeah. I know.
Oh, Hoff can take over?
Yeah.
Hoff, do you have some stuff on opening day?
I have a lot, actually, yes.
Okay, why don't you take over and let me find out what Spence is calling me out for, okay?
All right, no problem. I'll take over.
Okay, I won't tell anybody. Let's go.
All right. Now, listen, I am very pleased. If anybody listens to the Carton Show at all today with Chris McMonagle, as I'll put the lights on, you know, you may have heard me be a little bit negative at something, because the one thing I listen, first of all, opening day was fantastic. I think Evan nailed everything. It was a win is a win. You have to be excited about a win on opening day. But the one thing that really always bothers me is we knocked out Paul Skeens. That was great. But a lot of it is based off of the fact that O'Neal Cruz sucks. Like, he is not a center fielder. We knocked out Paul Skeens because little chippy hits, little like baby hits, not like line drives, not like we were beating him and it was amazing. It was like little dribblers and stuff like that. I'm not terribly excited about how we killed Paul Skeens, but it's a win. So I'm not going to argue that and be like, oh, well, whatever. What I will say, these are the moments for me that made me feel good about today. The Carson Bench home run was great. Doesn't make a difference what pitcher it was off of. It doesn't make a difference which point in the game it was off of. That was huge because that's his first hit of his career. It's opening day. It's a good. It's a big environment, and he was able to rip one, pull one. That was great to see. Francisco Alvarez's home run was really good to see. I need to see those. The other things too. Two more things before. Hey, he's back. Two more.
All things. Good. All good. Keep going.
Yeah. The other big things that I thought that were huge moments was the Juan Soto. Last year, we waited for Juan Soto to get a hit in a big spot. Bases were loaded. I think the game was we were still had a big lead at this point in time. But Juan Soto was still able to get a nice go with the pitch, went left field, driving a run. I think that was big. And then Tobias Myers going through. I wasn't happy he gave him a home run so quick, but listen, that happens. But three solid innings from Tobias Myers. Those were some huge. That to me was the positive I took from this game. I know we won 11-7, but I don't really know if we're going to start to like small ball the hell out of every single team. You know, Pittsburgh is awful defensively.
Yes. Yeah, no doubt. No, I think it's one of those. By the way, everything's okay. I think sometimes the emergency for the five-year-old is maybe not the same emergency as it is.
Yes.
But hey, you can't blame me. I get that message. I'm like, all right, I'm going down. I got you. Yeah, I think everything was positive. What I'm noticing in the emails, and I'll read a few of these. Steven writes, Bo equals DH. Put Beatty at third. DH, Bo. Let's go, Mets. There's a lot of negativity around Bo Bichette's defense. And again, I missed the first inning. I'll rewatch a little bit of it. The only thing that happened that's really that bad was he had an offline throw to first base. And it turned out not to matter. I mean, Polanco made the play, and it's still a new position for him. And I think we have to at least be open to the fact that it is. We can't assume it to be a finished product on day one. So, look, I make this declaration with Met fans. Is there going to be a day where I come on the Rico, where you come on the Rico, and we say, look, the guy can't play third base? Possibly. Like, I'm not ruling that out. I cannot do that a day in. I haven't seen enough. I still haven't seen enough. Let's get to the grind of this season, and we'll have a better idea on Bo Bichette's defense at third base.
If anything, I'm questioning Polanco's defense already, because I'm sitting there going, I was always taught as a first baseman, you're if you're a right-handed or a thrower and you got the glove on the left hand, your right foot is the one that you're kind of planting on first base. I saw a lot of throws where his left foot was on first base, and I'm like, that doesn't feel like he's going to be able to stretch very well. He's not putting himself in good positions. But that's just me. It's one game. we'll see if he can make really good plays.
They're learning positions. Like, that's why we all need to kind of come up with a date. I was doing this on the air with Trent Grisham, you know, talking Yankees, not the Talking Yankees pod, that's John Boy, but talking about the Yankees. And it was, hey, at what point would you say, all right, I don't want to watch Trent Grisham anymore. I think when it comes to guys learning defense or learning a new position, there needs to be a date where we say, okay, then we'll evaluate them. I even think May 1st, which you could bring up, is probably too soon. It's probably June 1st. It's probably let's reevaluate in June. I think with Polanco, look, Bo Bichette's the third baseman, all right? You can send all the emails you want and bitch about it all you want. He's going to be the third baseman, and he's going to be the third baseman for a while. The first base thing's a little different. That gets a little bit more complicated because Beatty is a real candidate, and I think it benefits Polanco and the Mets to actually have him DH to try to keep him healthy. There's a few other thoughts I have from this opening day, this successful opening day. My dad was telling me that the introductions were truncated. Now, I don't know if this has anything to do with NBC and Peacock, but the Pirates were actually never announced. And they didn't announce the full Met roster, which is what they normally do. Like, they usually announce all the trainers and it becomes comical, like the dietitian and all that. They didn't do that this year. So I don't know if that had to do with NBC. I don't know if the Mets just figured there's too many names. Let's not do this. But yeah, the introductions were a little altered, according to my dad, who was in the building.
Yeah, I didn't see them all, but I will tell you this much. The one thing that the Mets did that was really good, because we were trying to figure out, is it on SNY? Is it going to be on Peacock? I will say that I was able to watch it live on social media. Like, they did it live on X for you. So, like, you were able to see it. If you didn't know what channel it was on, you could just go to X and legitimately watch the intro. So I thought that was a good job by them. Now, whether they were truncated or not, I literally caught when Benj got called out. So that was great. I missed a lot of it.
Well, and look, you're working too. Obviously, you're in the old spot I was in terms of when there's an afternoon game, it's tough to really watch it. So as I'm leaving the stadium, which was not that bad, I guess people left early. Mets had a big lead, so getting out of the parking lot was not that bad. I heard getting into the parking lot was a disaster. I'll learn more over the next couple of days when I actually go to games at real times. But as I was leaving, I'm listening to the postgame show. I wanted to hear what Carlos Mendoza had to say. Carson Benj sounded great. Like, Carson Benj was obviously so fired up about what happened in his major league debut. What I was not aware of, and again, I don't know if TV showed this, but apparently, while Carson Benj was playing right field, two birds collided with each other. One of them, I guess, dropped dead on the grass in right field, and Benj didn't want to pick it up. The crowd started chanting, pick it up, pick it up. Benj didn't want to do it, and I guess eventually, I don't mean to laugh because I feel bad. Like, I don't want a bird to die, but this bird got picked up, and Benj showed a lot of fortitude, not giving in to the public pressure of the people in right field that wanted him to pick up the dead bird.
I mean, not for nothing, we've all seen Randy Johnson murder a bird in real life. So, I mean, this is nothing. He had nothing to do with it. It happened to die next to him. And yeah, it was the top of the fifth. The score was, I think, 6-4 at that point in time, and they came out with a bucket and, like, kind of shoveled it up. Dude, no offense to anybody, but when there's a dead animal, I'm not the first thing is, oh, I'm just going to pick it up with my bare hand. Like, contamination, all that stuff. Like, nah. I'm not a germaphobe for much, but for dead animals, no way. So, but I thought that was a symbol. I'm like, oh, come on. This game, dead bird, like the mess up with the national anthem. What else is going to happen? Are we going to have like a weird season this year?
I mean, I want a normal season. It feels like the last 2 years have been incredibly weird. And one thing I've learned about seasons, and certainly the last two are indications of it. The first game of the season ain't going to tell you anything. The first week of the season ain't going to tell you anything. Now, that doesn't mean I don't want to sweep the Pirates and beat the crap out of them and sweep St. Louis. I mean, they have a chance when you look at the beginning of this season to get off to a good start. I know a lot of people love the Pittsburgh Pirates and they should be better, but the Mets are better and the Mets should beat up on them. The St. Louis Cardinals are rebuilding right now. The Mets should beat up on them. We'll find out about the Giants. They obviously did not get off to a good start first day of the season against the Yankees, but the Mets certainly have an opportunity to bank some wins early and get off to a really good start. What I hate about opening day, there's one thing I hate besides, you know, it being a pain in the ass in terms of trying to get to. I hate the fact that there's no game on Friday. I hate the fact that we got the season back and now we have to wait. And that sucks. Like, I wish there was a Friday night game two of this series. We have to wait till Saturday afternoon, but we will. And we will get more baseball and a chance to go on a run. Now, I mentioned something about my wallet earlier. So, personally, the way I handled this opening day, back in the middays, is that I drove to Citi Field at 7 a.m. with my son, Jet. I parked the car. I took the train to work, which was very adventurous because there were two women that almost got into a fist fight. That happened while we were there. So that was adventurous. I also almost lost Jet because he went through the turnstile in the subway. I then waited to go to my turn, and I was informed by Omni, it's too soon. You have to wait. Meanwhile, my son's on the other freaking side. I freaked out. I don't know what to do. Luckily, the woman behind me paid for my train thing to let me get through. I was like, this woman is a savior. What I didn't realize is if I just took my credit card out, I could have done it that way. I would have been fine. So it was an adventurous situation getting to the radio station. We do the show. I duck out early. I go on Zoom trying to at least be a part of the show via the train. And then, and I had no idea when, as I'm finally getting to the stadium in the bottom of the first inning, I reach down into my pocket and I don't see my wallet. And I'm like, you know what, Evan, don't freak out. It's probably in one of your bags. Maybe you threw it in the car because we passed our car going into the stadium and put a lot of my work bag and work stuff in there. So I was like, you know what? Don't overthink it. You don't really need your wallet. Everything's on your phone. No biggie. No biggie spot. And then all of a sudden, I'm getting phone calls that somebody, and this guy's my hero, the cousin of someone from Odyssey, found it on the floor, I guess at Mets Willets Point, I guess when I was coming off the train, gave it to LIRR, and luckily, my wallet is safe. It's not with me, but it's safe. So, damn, what an experience.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because I wanted to, but I felt like I didn't know if you wanted anybody to know about that, because I'm not sure if you're canceling your car. Dude, you lose your wallet, you got to cancel your credit cards, everything in the world. You just don't let that like slide anymore. So I'm glad it's in a safe place right now. It's all protected. But yeah, I got a phone call about that as well, saying they know where it is and they know where it's going to be, where you can pick it up. So, dude, I mean, you guys ran out of here so quick. I'm surprised you didn't lose your bag too.
Yeah, but as I was running out, and I don't know if Craig told you this story. Did he tell you what Jet said to him?
No.
What? It was one of my favorite parts of the day was I'm running out and Craig is right there. Craig Carton, for those that are not aware. And he sees Jet, who he hadn't seen in like 3 years. I mean, we did a show together a long time ago. And he says, Jet, do you remember me? And Jet gives him this look of, not really. Like, Jet knows of Craig, but he probably just doesn't remember what he looks like. So he's giving him that look of he doesn't remember. And Craig's like, come on, Craig, you don't remember? And I said, come on, Jet, it's Uncle Craig. You don't remember him? And he looks into his eyes and says, yeah, you just aged a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I also saw somebody else try to stop and talk to Jet, and you just were like, sorry, not to be rude, we got to run.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to fly out. My goal was, I didn't execute it very well. My goal was to be in the train on Zoom before the next commercial break ended. So like, hey, I'm here, what's up? No big deal. And we sort of did it. I did broadcast a little bit from the subway, maybe a first in FA in history. I have no idea. But it was adventurous. That's how I would define opening day. And luckily, I'll get my wallet back. And luckily, Met fans, we have our baseball back. And I can promise you this, all right, at least to start the year, I think we're re-going every day. I think there's a really good chance we may do post games. Now, I have said that we will continue to keep the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series for the end of series, just like the net negative. So I'm not going to name a star of the game or a net negative of the game. But if I was, I guess the net negative would be Luis Garcia. And I guess the I'm the man now would probably be, that's a tough one because so many guys contributed. So many guys were.
I know who it would be. It would be the guy that called you and said, I have your wallet.
That's the guy. Yes. That's the man. His name is Constantine. That's my guy. You're the star of the series. But either way, hell of a victory. Hopefully everybody had a wonderful day. You can send us your emails and thoughts, thericob@gmail.com, thericob@gmail.com. And I do remind you, subscribe to The Rico Bronya. We are going to Rico quite a bit, especially early on this season, because my kids are going to be away and my family is going to be away. So what else am I going to do besides talk to you? So make sure you're subscribed, whether it's the WFAN YouTube page, where we have a lot of great content, including my buddy Big Mac starting his Yankee podcast, which you should check out. And of course, wherever you download your podcast. Happy opening day, LGM, and thank you for listening to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.